In this episode of the Sailing World Podcast, we feature part one of our interview with Neil Hawksford from the Glada Project about building and cruising his Warham 38 catamaran. We also have some sailing news for you, and our product of the week will help you wash all that corrosive salt off your boat and trailer. All that and more on the Sailing Road. Welcome to the Sailing Road. If you have ever dreamed of sailing off over the horizon, or if you just like to cruise the coast or your local lake, then this podcast is for you. We share that dream to one day sail full time. In the meantime, we enjoy our weekend coastal cruising as we build our experience and our cruising funds. My name is Steve Payment, and I am joined by a girl who loves the feel of sand between her toes, my beautiful fiance, Brandy Bryant.
Yep. Got a lot of that this weekend.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
We spent the entire weekend standing on the beach.
On the beach from about 1:30 in the afternoon till about 10 o'clock at night. Rain or shine, we might add.
Not the typical time, I guess, you'd be standing on the beach, but we went to the Tortuga Music Festival.
Yep.
On the beach in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
So much fun.
Had a blast. This is our second year there. We talked a little bit about it on the podcast before, but it is just a who's who of country music. Every artist you can think of sang, and we heard some great performances. We had a little challenge on the weather this year. It was
it got really bad. Was it Friday night? Friday night, about 4:45, maybe 5 o'clock, they completely evacuated the entire beach because the weather was just going to start taking a bad turn. So sure enough, as soon as we got off of the beach and across the street to the hotel that we were actually, a friend of ours had a room at, it just, the gods opened up, it poured, it lightning, it was a hot mess. So we did miss a few acts that night, but I think that was as bad as it actually got. We're chilly a lot of the times. I think we, by 5 o'clock, we're putting on sweatshirts to not be cold from the wind. The wind stayed, what, maybe 15, 20 knots the whole weekend right on the beach line? So
it was pretty rough. And there's always some boats that try to anchor right off of the shoreline of the beach and listen to the music. But every year we look at them going, boy, it just seems it'd be miserable. It's just with the onshore swell and it's, you know, to get close enough, you can hear the music. You have to get to where the waves start
breaking,
kind of coming up and starting to swell even higher. So you just see these boats, even the more expensive ones that have the
equalizers.
Yeah, whatever, stabilizers in them. Yeah. Those were even rocking like crazy. So it's pretty rough.
We don't suggest doing that, that's for sure.
No, I don't think it's worth it. But we still had a good time, and we spent some time around the Fort Lauderdale area. The hotel area that we stayed in, we talked before, is the big Bahia Mar Marina, and it just has some amazing boats. There was two sailboats in there that both of them had to be over 100 foot. I know the masts were about 120 feet, so maybe they were beautiful. Maybe they're 150 foot boats, who knows, but just some amazing boats down there. It is the mega yacht capital of the world, so there is a lot of money flowing through there. I don't think we saw many boats that we even would dream of affording.
Not in our price range, but hey, we'd love to look at them, that's for sure.
Yeah, so we had a good time hanging out down there. And talking about boats, and I'm still working on boat show video. I'm having a hard time even saying this, but I called that I would finish the last boat show video before I released the last podcast.
How'd that work out?
It didn't happen.
And maybe we're busy. People have got to realize this stuff takes time, and we have full-time jobs. They will understand, won't you?
I've talked about this. The podcast alone is taking 15 to 20 hours an episode, and it's unbelievable to try and fit all that in. And do videos is just too much. So I am pretty much committing now that all of our videos are going to be probably a season behind, because most likely the times I'm going to do them are in the winter months when we're not actively out sailing and doing as much. So I'm going to stop calling that any videos are going to be done.
Them done when you can get them done. It doesn't necessarily have to be a season behind, but when we get them done, we will be sure to let you guys know. That's for sure.
The thing is, we always have so much great video, and I'd love to get it out. I just can't find the time to do it. So we'll figure it out, but we'll keep working on that. So So at least our sailing videos, I'm going to start thinking, okay, what did we do a year ago that I can put in a video and put a whole trip together and put that out, because then I'm not feeling
the first video, I think, needs to be the Miami Boat Show, because you got the two. We got to get the third. Okay.
I'll get to it. Another update I wanted to give. We talked last time about our trailer issues and the fact that we lost a hub on the trailer and I had it in the shop. And I actually got some good news out of picking the trailer up. So it turns out that our brakes on the one axle were not bad.
Yeah.
They are definitely bad. They're just not dead yet. And so the trailer mechanic said he thought probably get another season out of them. So we may actually get...
Like a full season.
Yeah.
I thought maybe just a couple more trips.
No, we may actually get 4 years out of that set of brakes.
Wow, that's nice.
My mechanic's saying 3 years is good. And we'll talk a little bit later in the show. I've got a product that I've been using and that I definitely think it is helping with keeping the corrosion off of all the metals on both the boat and the trailer. So
we'll
talk about that in our product of the week. And I think that's about it. We don't have anything else scheduled for on our cruising schedule right now.
No, womp womp, unfortunately. But we got to go visit family.
Yeah, we've got some things going on with family that we got to take care of. But I think we'll definitely get a trip going here in the next couple of weeks. It's just the fact that we don't often know, unless we have friends planning something, we don't know where we're going to go. And we've talked about it on the podcast before that we also like to wait until a couple days before we're leaving to actually decide where we're going because of weather.
Yep, absolutely.
Just it makes it so much, especially this time of year when it's we're going from spring and even the fall in Florida are more predictable. There aren't the thunderstorms rolling through every day.
By 3 o'clock in Florida, it's raining. No matter where you are.
This time of year, we're starting to move into thunderstorm season. But the last 4 months, you could pretty much go any weekend. And it may
be
a rainy weekend, but it's not going to be a really bad thunderstorm type weekend. So those are coming up. And we'd like to really figure out what part of the state is going to be more affected by those tropical storms and where aren't. And then we plan our trip. So,
so we've got the next couple weekends pretty much free. So
right. So the reason I bring this up is... If you live in Florida, I think I've looked at the statistics. We have more listeners in Florida than any state in the country. And if you're a sailor in Florida, we'd love to meet up with you. Or if you hear we're going somewhere that we said we haven't been before and you got some tips, you know, let us know. And the best way to do that is to be friends with the Sailing Road on Facebook, because we'll put out there, hey, we got excited about a trip that we got planned for this weekend coming up. And then you can just comment on there and say, hey, you know, I got some ideas for you. Check this out. Check that out. We would love that because we're always trying to find new areas and go new places. And when we do, it's great to, you know, get tips from the locals. So
absolutely.
So another reason to get out there and friend the Sailing Road on Facebook. So that is it for the intro chat. And we'll be right back with our interview this week.
This interview is going to be a little bit different, huh?
Yeah, this was, unfortunately, Brandy was not able to be part of this interview I did. I think I may even have mentioned in the interview that I did this one while I was on the road, sitting in my truck in another city in Florida, while Neil Hawksford, who we're going to talk to, is sitting in Spain, I believe. So this interview is with Neil Hawksford, and he has a website and blog called The Glada Project. His boat is also called Glada. And Neil is one of those unique breeds of sailors who decided that he wanted to build a boat, and he'll even talk about it. I think he needed to build a boat. This was just something in him that he needed to do and complete. And that's something that even makes him more unique in these guys that decide they want to build their own boat at home, is that he actually completed it and now he's cruising on it, which I have talked about this before. I just have a tremendous amount of respect for these guys that can see this through and complete it, because it is such a huge task. And he'll talk about that in the interview. But he's out there now cruising with his girlfriend, Gail. And unfortunately, she was not able to be on the podcast.
It was an all-man's interview.
Yeah, so Brandy was not with me. So we just did the guys talking here. So in part one of the interview here, we're going to talk about Neil's decision to build the boat and how he balanced kind of his paying job with his passion job, which was building the boat. So here's the interview.
Hello.
Hi, Neil.
Steve. Good to talk to you.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Oh, so that's good. I had stereo, then it was ringing on the iPad as well.
So. All this technology, it's amazing.
Yeah, okay, I was sitting here on a simple boat surrounded by electronics.
It's exactly. Great. You try to, you know, simplify life by going cruising, and we bring all this electronics into it.
Oh, well, no doubt we'll talk a little about that.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm traveling today, and I'm sitting in my truck in a parking lot in Jacksonville, Florida.
Wow.
Trying, this is...
Oh, well, okay. Well, it sounds like we're good to go.
Yeah.
I'm on the marina Wi-Fi at the moment, which is sometimes a bit iffy, not least because we've got about 20, 25 knots blown through at the minute. So the antenna tends to waggle around a bit, but I've got the... I've got some mobile data if it breaks down, but fingers crossed, we should be okay.
So let's start off, you know, with a little bit about where you're located right now and where the boat's located.
Okay, well, we're in Lagos Marina in on the Algarve in Portugal. We've actually been here since October. We took a 6-month winter contract to stay somewhere nice and safe and comfortable over the winter months, and that's where we've been this last 6 months. And in fact, we're due to leave here a week today. So we've had a great time here, but that's where we are right now.
And so, I mean, what kind of got you into cruising? What's your? Let's start with kind of your sailing background, and I know you have your partner on the boat, Gail, and unfortunately she was not able to be here today, and unfortunately Brandy is also working today, so she wasn't able to be on, so it's just the guys. But
okay,
give us a little bit about your both your sailing backgrounds.
Yeah, well, it's a bit strange. I mean, sailing background, my book that I've just published, A Foolish Voyage, basically covers a lot of it. When I was still a youngster, I went through a bit of a stage in my life where I just needed to go and do something different, and I bought a small sailboat and lived on her on the south coast of England and got into yacht deliveries, and that resulted in me spending a good couple of years pretty much sailing full time. Other than dinghies, I hadn't done any sailing up until that point. It was just something I fancied having a go at, and it was fantastic. Again, as the book shows, it kind of all came to an end unexpectedly, and I ended up ashore again and back in my hometown, which is actually in the Midlands, right in the middle of the UK, well away from the sea, and life basically took me in a different direction. So I'd done 3 years in the Royal Navy. I did a couple of years of pretty much full-time sailing, and then that was me. I was away from the sea, and I always had a hankering to get back to it, but one thing and another, it just didn't happen for something like 25 years.
Oh, wow.
then I came to a point where I said, you know what, I've got to satisfy this need to get back to the sea again and go sailing, and that's what led to me formulating a plan to build my own boat and do that, because I figured it was the only way I was ever going to be able to do it in the way that I wanted to do it. And that's about 10 years ago now, and started building the boat and got her finished, and she was launched 2 years ago. And for me now, that's it. I have no property. I have no other place to be. The boat is home, and we'll see what the next years bring. But I'm just happy to be here and finally doing what I've actually wanted to do for an awful long time.
Absolutely. So what was in the 25-year break there, what was your career?
It was a little bit varied, but predominantly I was working in construction, in floor coverings, and it was a crazy job, which I enjoyed, but when I look back on it now, I mean, I know your sense of scale over there on that side of the water is a little different to the UK, but I was driving 1,000 miles a week on the UK motorways and high pressure construction site meetings and a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. And although I relished it to some extent, when I look back on it now, it was a crazy period, and I guess ultimately I got to the point where I thought, I'm going to kill myself if I carry on doing it. I suppose that's what it boiled down to. And there's a lot of people, I think, in that sort of situation. You look at the monthly paycheck and you look at the mortgage and you look at your lifestyle and you kind of think, I have no choice but to do this. But you know what? sometime you have to sit back from it a bit and say, maybe I have actually got a choice, and it may be a tough choice I've got to make. I think for some people, for a lot of people, it would be the right one to take the foot off the gas and find another way.
Yeah, I think you're right. A lot of people, and I've even looked at that in my career. I've been in the computer industry for 25 years now, and you start to hit that point where you say, is this really where I want to spend, you know, the future years? And at some point, I mean, I've had a great career and I've enjoyed it, but at some point you decide there's other things you want to do in your life and you need to start taking steps to get there. Otherwise, all of a sudden you get sick and you realize you're never going to have a chance to do that.
Yeah, I think it's an age thing, you know. I think, you know, there are youngsters who, for whatever reason, you know, manage to kind of, or they either never want to go down that path and they go down an entirely different path. They never kind of get into the career and the work path. If you don't break away, I think when you're a youngster, really break away, you kind of get trapped in those middle years. And I've certainly come across a lot of people. I mean, for me, I think it was hitting 50, which was the turning point for me, and approaching 50. And I've spoken to others who've been much the same, the late 40s into the 50s. You suddenly start to think, what have I got now? You know, how many more years have I got left on this planet? What haven't I done that I really do want to do? And I think it kind of hits you.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about your past boats. I know that we'll talk a little bit about the book as we move on here. And that's really what, you know, got me to reach out to you, as I read your book and really enjoyed it. I think, you know, you're a natural writer, number one.
Thank you.
I guess it's not a writer. You're a natural storyteller. And I just felt it was a great adventure story that I felt like I was along for the trip. And that's what I look for when I read sailing books, is somebody that can really pull you in and put you in the place that they were at the time and give you that vision. That's just, you know, good writing. And it was very natural flow to the book. So really appreciate you chronicling those years of sailing and what all you went through. So talk a little bit about the boats you've had and the sailing that you've done.
Yeah, I was saying I've been blown away. It was really kind of you to say what you've said about my writing. But yeah, I've been blown away by the emails that I've had back from people. I get a couple of emails a week off folks that have read the book, and there's a good number of reviews on Amazon, and I'm just blown away by the response, and I never really expected it. It's funny, it's much like the blog I started when I started building the boat. I kind of started off almost with a selfish reason. I never intended that other people would sort of get any pleasure or benefit from it, and I guess I should have known, because with the blog, I started getting lots of people following along and sending comments, and you know, that was great. And it's kind of repeated itself with the book. It was something I kind of needed to do. I wanted to write the book, and once I'd written it, it was a bit of a no-brainer not to actually publish it. And it was a scary thing to do, because equally I was worried that if I put it out there, you know, people might hate it. Right. And that would shatter my confidence completely. But so it was scary to press the button and publish it. But it's certainly been fantastic to have that response, and it's made me think that maybe I should do some more writing over the summer. I think I probably will.
Oh, absolutely. I highly recommend it. I think you've got a natural way of telling a story, and I think you know, we need more writers like that in the sailing industry. It just captures people's imagination. And back to the points we were talking about earlier, a lot of people, you know, aren't at the point that they can just pack everything up and move on to the next point of their life where they're going to sail more. And they look for those outlets.
Absolutely.
And following along. So you deliver something that's very important to people.
I think it's an interesting, I mean, you know, as I said, my sailing background isn't huge. I mean, let's be honest here. You know, what I've written about in the book forms the majority of my sailing experience. And as I said earlier, I kind of left it behind for a while then. And so, in terms of the boats that I've actually owned, there have only been two. There have been the boat Moorgrass that I wrote about, and there's this boat that I'm sitting on now. I've sailed lots of other boats, obviously into deliveries. I mean, doing 2 years of yacht deliveries actually was fantastic experience, because not only did it boost my sailing confidence and knowledge, but it also set me on the path to building this type of boat and having my philosophy, if we want to call it that. Because I mean, firstly, when I started working on delivering boats, I didn't even know yacht delivery businesses existed. The idea that people could actually have the money to have these gorgeous sailboats and yet not actually have the time to be able to move them from A to B just seemed crazy to me. But of course, it gave me the opportunity to spend time on these fantastic boats. And it was interesting, because quite quickly, it was amazing how many times we would walk down the dock and I'd clap eyes on this incredible sailboat, thinking, you know, if I had the money, that's what I would have. And then after spending 24 hours at sea on her, suddenly I changed my mind. You know, right. suddenly this boat wasn't quite all she was cracked up to be. In a lot of cases, it was neglect, if you like, but in most cases, I found that these boats were just too damn complicated. You know, there's right. just too much to go wrong. And if these boats, even if they're used all the time, it's a full-time job. But of course, when these boats aren't used all the time, suddenly you find that maintenance hasn't been done, or, you know, the more systems that you have, the more there is to go wrong. And you'll have experienced this, I'm sure. Anybody who's spent any time around boats, you know, one of the subjects of conversation that comes up an awful lot is the latest problem somebody has, the latest thing that's gone wrong, the problem they're trying to solve, you know. And we're certainly seeing it here. There's quite a few boats in this marina at the moment preparing to head out across the Atlantic later this year. You know, and they're loading the boats up with electronics and water makers and this, that, and the other. It's costing them a fortune to do. And you've only got to pick up a sailing magazine that reviews boats that have crossed the Atlantic and what went wrong, you know, and it's autopilots and it's water makers. And,
yeah. Right.
So we all desire these goodies, but they just add a huge layer of cost and complication to things, I think.
Yeah, it's like anything. Do you really own it, or does it own you? And that's where you need to, as much as you can, simplify. I mean, certain things are very convenient and are very helpful. And it's you know, if those are important to you, then to make your life a little bit easier. But you have to understand that it also is going to come with a maintenance and a possibility to break. I've heard, read stories so many times over the years of, you know, different levels of complexity in boats. And I think we'll get into, you know, how yours is set up, and you're at the lower scale of complexity. But when, after a passage, when you pull into port, many times you're, you know, tidy up the boat and let's go have fun ashore. Whereas the complex boat says, well, I got a 3 days of trying to call up people to fix this and that and the other thing. And are, you know, they may have been more comfortable at times, but are they really enjoying the process? Keeping the boat
absolutely
up.
Absolutely. So, and you know, it's not just boats. It's a conditioning, I think, that people have now that you know, and I've suffered from it myself. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a car, whether it's a house, whatever, you know, you want the best that you can afford. That's what we're conditioned to do. And yet the other craziness of that is when we get that best that we can afford, we then look at somebody else's boat, car, house that's bigger and better than ours and think, oh, I've got this, but actually I want, oh, that's even better. I really want that. So we don't even appreciate and enjoy what we've got half the time.
Right. So let's give a little overview of your first boat. It was, as I read the book, you know, you were young at the time, but it was a very small boat. What was the length on your first boat?
18 feet. She was an 18-foot Hurley Silhouette, which was a bilge-keeled day sailor. Quite a well-thought-of boat, it has to be said, but not cut out for, not really cut out for ocean sailing.
And just to, so. Like a small cabin, you know, with one berth.
She actually had two berths, if you like, or a seating area and one berth. But two people would be cozy in there.
Right. So we're going to recommend people definitely go out and read the book, and you can get a lot more details on that first boat and the adventures that you had. I think it's you talk about doing something when you're young and taking that time out to have an adventure, even though it took you 25 years to get back to it again. I think that it's similar to kids that will take some time and maybe go backpacking across Europe. It gives them the travel bug that lasts a lifetime because they see other places that they'd like to explore more at some point in their life. Whereas if they never do that, they don't have that taste of it.
It's memories, it's experiences, you get these things firsthand. And I think I said one of the things I said in the back of the book is that, too many people now, the internet's a wonderful thing, media's a wonderful thing, but actually, you know what, people can sit in their comfy chair at home and experience the world. But I use the word experience very loosely there because they're not actually experiencing it, and I think it's very easy to get sucked into that. And I think there's a risk aversion thing as well. My book's called A Foolish Voyage, and I called it that because in many people's eyes, what I did with that boat was foolish. I'll probably hold my hands up to that. Yeah, it probably was. But you know what? I think we need a few more fools around the place. Stupidity is something to be avoided. Foolishness is something to be avoided. Recklessness certainly is something to be avoided, and I do try and avoid that. But I think there's a little bit of an issue there that people are afraid to try something, afraid to do something without, and applying this to sailing, without having all of the information, without having all of the right equipment, having exactly the right boat. And because it's so difficult, if not impossible, to get all of those things, in many cases, then they end up doing nothing. And I think that's sad. I think if people just push themselves a little bit and said, I don't care if I end up getting it wrong or looking a bit stupid in some people's eyes, I'm gonna try, I'm gonna do it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Absolutely. It's a great message. So let's talk a little bit about, this 25 years goes by, you hit the point in your life and you say, I really want to get back into sailing. And take me through the decision to build a boat versus buy a boat. And then also, why you chose the Warham catamaran.
Okay. All right. Well, I think the first thing I would say, don't build a boat. If you want to go sailing, buy a boat. Don't build a boat. It's a strange one. I think if there are people out there who want to build a boat, it's a heart thing, not a head thing. You'll know if you want to build a boat, and it'll be damn difficult to explain why you want to build a boat. It was for me. I first saw a Warham catamaran when I was sailing my small boat 30 years ago. And I saw this crazy looking catamaran and what is that? I've never seen anything like that. And I got to know the people in it. Long story short, I thought, there's just something about that boat. I would so love to have a boat like that. And that memory never went away. And there was a seed sown at that point in time. During that sort of 20 year period where I wasn't sailing, I think I sent off for the James Warham design book, which contains all of his designs for these types of catamarans. I think I sent off for that book two or three times. I would get the catalogue, I would read up on the books, I would look at the design plans. It was always there in my head. It got pushed to the back time and time again, but it was always there. So as to the decision to build a boat, it was a long time coming. And as I said, I wouldn't recommend to anybody to build a boat, because the only logical reason for building a boat really is to go sailing. And if you want to go sailing, you can do it quicker and you can do it cheaper by buying a boat, particularly in the current market, than you ever will by building one. So it comes from the heart. It comes from the heart. Following on from that, yeah, for me, it was okay, what can I build? Because I'm not a boat builder. People look at this boat and say, hey, you're a boat builder. No, I am not a boat builder. That's a craft. That's a trade. That takes years of training to build a boat in the traditional way. And I don't claim to be able to do that. I wouldn't be able to do that. So that kind of limited it, because I was then looking for a design of boat that I would be capable of building myself. There are others apart from Warren. There are some good boats out there apart from Warren, but as I've said, that was my chosen route. After that, it was a case of, well, I need a boat that's going to keep me safe. I need a boat that can cross oceans. And Warren Designs have a well-proven track record in that. So, yeah, that was what pushed me down the route of building a Warren Cat.
And did you, at that point, you said, well, I'm going to start this process. Did you say, well, I'm going to devote everything to this and do it full time? Or did you just kind of start, take a first set and say, I'm going to keep working and just do this part time?
No, I mean, there was not an option of doing it full time when I started. It was very much, right, it's evenings and weekends. You know, I needed the day job to buy the materials, to rent the barn, to build her in, and so on and so forth. You know, it took me, best guesstimate is something over 4,500 hours space over 8 years to build this boat. That said, I did take a year off for various reasons. So really 7 years of building. You know, that's the best way I can describe it is productive insanity. it's just, you know, it's not something you can explain easy. Even cost, you know.
Right.
Yes, for the boat that I've got, you know, I think I've got value for money. But if I tell you, I could have bought a good ocean cruising monohull for the money I paid in the rent for the barn in which I built this boat.
Right.
You know? Well, so financially,
the opportunity cost for your time too. That's 8 years of nights and weekends of other experiences. You could have been out sailing or something.
Well, actually, Stevie, it wasn't, because here's another interesting thing about the whole boat building thing. You know, you can try and isolate it and say it's a purely mechanical, physical thing of constructing a vessel in which you can sail the oceans. So for the first 3, 4, 5 years, that's what I was doing. I was working the day job. I mean, I learned quickly that if I got home from a long day, I couldn't afford the luxury of stopping and eating and having a shower or anything before I went out, because I wouldn't go out to the barn. So I'd literally come through the door, get changed, and go straight out to the boat build, and get 2 or 3 hours in, because if I didn't keep the momentum up, and you know, let me tell you, over a UK winter, it's hard. You know, it's dark, it's cold, it's wet, and you're going up to build a timber boat under a single floodlight. You know, when your hands are numb and you can't feel your fingers, it was tough. There was that element to it, but during the process changed me. After about 4 or 5 years of building, start to see a light at the end of the tunnel. My thoughts started moving from, I think up until that point, I could only focus on the boat build. What, you know, I knew it was going to be finished at some point, but it was too far down the track to think about. So I just focused on the build. But once I was a certain way into it, the mind started turning to, okay, when this boat's finished, then what? You know, am I going to sail her at the weekends and carry on working? And I suddenly realized that, no, I wasn't. This was going to be a life changer. You know, I was going to be on board this boat permanently. I didn't know how the hell I was going to make any money or what was going to happen, but I just knew I would have to do it. So I kind of then realized that, well, hang on a sec. If I'm going to do that anyway, why slog my guts out at this day job? Why not quit the day job? And find a way now, you know, and put more time into the boat and finish her quicker. So that's basically what I ended up doing. I quit my job, much to the boss's amazement and disbelief,
That was about year five.
Yeah, thereabouts. But, you know, we're back to the foolishness thing again. You know, it flew in the face of all logic. Right. Hold on, you're giving up this well-paid, safe, relatively safe job to build. And how are you going to earn them? You don't know. You know, it just...
Right. Well, you're making an investment in the lifestyle and a future home instead of investing in your 401k and your bank account.
I still need to make some money, and I went down the self-employed route. I tried doing some internet marketing and dabbled in this, that, and the other, and nothing was really successful. But you know what? I survived. I got through. You know,
right?
And time was more valuable to me than money at that stage, and because of that, I was able to finish the boat sooner.
Sure. So you know, 8 years, you get the boat done, and I have to say, we're going to point pick people to your blog, and the blog's name is, the pronunciation, is it Glada?
Glada, spot on. Yeah, Glada.
Glada. So the Glada Project is the blog, and so Glada is the name of the boat.
That's correct.
And where does Glada come from?
It's actually an old English girl's name, goes back to the sort of Saxon times, but it's an old English girl's name, and it means to make happy.
Ah, that's appropriate.
Yeah, it kind of fitted when I found it. So, and it was nice. Good. It was nice and short to paint and talk on the VHF, you know.
Right, right. We've talked about that in the future when we get our cruising boat. I want a simple name that I don't have to spell out 15 letters or several words. But
yes.
So I will say, I think I'd sent this to an email along the lines of the book that I really enjoyed and the quality and the way you write. Looking, and this is just from pictures that I've seen of your build, I've seen a lot of Warham catamarans and self-built boats over the years, and some of them can be a bit rough. You know,
you're being very polite there.
but yeah, some of them can be very rough. In fact, some of them you wouldn't even consider going across the marina in, let alone anywhere offshore.
Absolutely.
But looking at yours, you can tell the detail and the pride you put into it to have the quality of looking like if this was being produced in a, you know, production format, this would be, you know, very close to that format and quality.
Yeah. I mean, I always said, it's funny, you know, when you start building the boat, of course, everything needs to be perfect. You know, you're learning how to use the epoxy and ironically, the bits that you're working on first are obviously down in the keels. You build the lower hulls upside down, so you're kind of working on the bit that nobody ever sees. And you actually put the most effort into that. And then as you progress, you kind of, I wouldn't say standard slip, well, yeah, standard slip a bit, you know.
Right.
But I always aimed for a workboat finish, and my priority was strength. You know,
sure.
Making sure the boat was built. Everything prettiness can come later, and I have prettied the boat a little bit, but my main aim was to make sure she was strong. And it's funny, where I was building the boat, there was a big old farm shed with a roof line about 25, 30 feet up opposite where I was working. And every now and again, when I was working away, putting some epoxy fillets in or whatever, you know, I'd look up at that shed and think, That could be a swell. That could be a wave in the middle of the Atlantic, and then I'd put a bit more epoxy on. You know,
that's definitely good motivation. Yeah,
I never lost sight of the fact that, you know, this boat's got to look after me. And you know, it's weird when you go ocean sailing. You know, it's a bit like being in a spaceship, isn't it? You know, we're in an alien environment. If that boat isn't around you, you're not going to last very long, you know. And it's well worth thinking about. And that was some another reason for me choosing a Warham and choosing a catamaran, because you know, aside from issues that I discovered with monohulls when I was doing deliveries in terms of keeping things simple and being able to repair and replace things, having a shallow draft, not having a big lump of lead hanging underneath, having a boat that, you know what, even if both hulls were full of water, she'd probably still float. There's, you know, strength. It's so important, you know, knowing every millimeter of the boat. you know, knowing where to go and what to do if something's not working. You know, it's all about safety. And whilst I've talked about being foolish and I've talked about, you know, pushing the boundaries a little bit, I'm way past the point of being reckless, you know, particularly when I have my girl on board, you know. if it's just you and you want to be a bit stupid, fair enough. But if you're responsible for other people, that's a whole different ball game. So so that's been my priority all the way along. So yeah, I'm pleased that she's pretty, I'm pleased she looks nice, and you're absolutely right, there are some real sheds out there, particularly Warham, sadly, that have been neglected, or people have decided to change the plans or whatever, and there are some horror stories out there, but yeah, for me it was always about having a boat that would do the job right.
Well, and I think you know, speaking back to why someone would build a boat, and everybody that's built the boat and finishes it usually has the same comment: the parties, the distant shores folks, everybody, they all say the same thing. If I had it to do over again, well, maybe the parties would be different. They usually say they don't recommend anybody to do it. No. Because it's so time consuming and so many details that you have to get into. But when it's all said and done, you have to have a tremendous amount of pride when you're coming into a marina and all the heads are turning, and then somebody walks down the dock and said, did you build this? And, oh yeah, and I just sailed it from the UK over to Spain. And, you know, it's got to be a tremendous sense of pride.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, it is. And it's you know, even now, having been on the boat for the best part of 2 years, you know, it's still yeah, there are days when I just sit on the deck and I'll look around the boat and I smile to myself, you know. I still can't quite believe it.
Right.
Well, we are going to stop part one of the interview there. And on the next podcast, we'll feature part two, where Neil will cover finishing and launching the boat and some of his cruising experiences so far. So make sure to check out Neil's blog, which is thegledaproject.com. And Gleda is spelled G-L-E-D-A. And I'll put the link in the show notes. And he also has some great YouTube videos of the build that he did. And he actually just posted one this week of a tour of the deck on the boat being all finished and everything out cruising. So check that out. And also really consider getting a copy of his book. I know it'd mean a lot to him. He put a lot into it. And I'll tell you, I've read a lot of sailing books over the last couple of years. And I really, really enjoyed this one. It's a fun read. It just kind of takes you back to your youth, your late teens, 20s, you know, thinking about the adventures you had and wishing you had more. And you just feel like you're along for the journey. So I really recommend that. I'll put up the link, direct link to his book in the show notes, and it'll also be in our Amazon store. So check that out. So up next is the sailing news. We'll be right back. Okay, now we're going to cover some of our sailing news this week, and we've got a couple stories pulled together. The first one is something I hadn't heard of before. It's NOAA, the American National Oceanic and Atmosphere Administration, who does all of the mapping of the seafloor and coasts and lakes and everything else. They have a new program that they're doing that they're using tiny boat drones that can map in areas where they previously haven't been able to do maps because they use either bigger ships or the satellite. A lot of our, I guess, maps are updated by satellite now, and it just can't get down to the really small areas and inlets. So they've created these tiny boat drones. They call them autonomous surface vehicles, also known as sea drones. And actually, I pulled this article from Popular Science, and Popular Science, Brandy will like this, they like to call the little boats rowboats. For robot boat.
Me and my top puns.
She loves puns. But they're doing these little boats, so I'm going to put the link to this article in the show notes, and there's a lot of really good videos in here about how they do it, and they just look like little motorized remote control boats, but they're, you know, robotic, where they do their own grid and they use sonar and other things to sound the bottom. So you can get really good detail of small areas, inlets and bays and other things like that. So this should help a lot with navigation and give you a lot better charts in the future. And our next story is about some guys that survived by using a very old and almost cartoonish method of being discovered. The U.S. Navy and Coast Guard rescued three mariners from a remote, uninhabited Pacific island a couple weeks ago after a Navy plane spotted palm fronds spelling out the word help on the sand. So the castaways, they constructed this makeshift SOS sign of saying help. They were stranded on an island called Fanatic for 3 days. And the island is about 2,600 miles southwest of Honolulu. So it's out there, very remote area. And I guess they were in a small boat that got swamped by a large wave, and they were forced to swim 2 miles to get to the shore, which is amazing that they even found a shoreline in that small area, because this is like a part of Micronesia, which has more than 600 islands in that area. So I guess maybe there's enough around that if you just keep swimming, you're going to hit one of them. But they said that a Navy plane had gone out and started searching for them because their families had announced they were missing. And as they went by the island, they saw this help sign that they made out of palm fronds. So
I guess they were smarter than the people from Gilligan's Island.
I know, Gilligan's Island. They always had a help sign out there. Nobody ever saw it, but it worked for these guys. So I thought that was pretty cool. And our next story is about a crew that is about to embark on one of these historical voyages on a replica historic ship. There's a crew of modern Vikings that are preparing to cross the North Atlantic Ocean, and they will be sailing on the largest Viking ship built in modern times. They've named the ship the Draken Harald Haarfagre. Something like that. I'm sure all the Norwegians will be really mad at my pronunciation, but I'm trying. They said they're going to relive the legendary journey of Leif Erikson, who 1,000 years ago sailed west across the Atlantic to discover the New World many centuries before Christopher Columbus. And if forces allow it, it says the Draken will set out from its home port at Haugesund on the Norwegian west coast on April 24th. That's like this week, right?
Yep.
This Sunday, I think. They'll sail to first to Iceland and then the southern tip of Greenland, both of which are important historical Viking sites. And then they'll continue along the traditional route to arrive in Newfoundland in modern-day Canada around June 1st. So I've always kind of liked these historical voyages. I think you have to be really brave, number one, because they're getting on these boats that are essentially open. You know, there's the ones that the tiki boats that they've taken out. And I've seen some others that are made out of reed that they've gone long voyages on. And you're exposed. You're out in the seas that modern ships are having a hard time dealing with. And you're doing it on these ships that are centuries old technology. And so it's taken on a lot. So I guess throughout the summer, they're also going to sail on to mainland Canada and into the Great Lakes. And they're going to hit a number of American ports, Toronto, Chicago, and New York City. So I'm going to put the article up there that you can see it and where they're going to stop. You may be able to see this stop by one of your big cities nearby. It says the Draken will be crewed by 32 sailors that were selected among nearly 4,000 applicants. And they're actually going to have a chase boat follow them through the voyage. So they'll have some security. It's going to have some cargo space and communication. So they're not just doing this solo, which I know some of the boats do that. But on the Draken itself, there's no underdeck except for some small storage. So the crew sleeps in watches in a tent that can shelter up to 16 sailors. And the boat, it says, the Draken Harald Haarfagre. I'll try that again. So the boat, the name,
Draken
Harald Haarfagre.
Sure. Haarfagre. Sounds good. Maybe keep going.
It was named after Harald Fairhair, who was the Viking king who united the Norway into one kingdom. So that's where the name comes
Speaking
from.
Speaking of interesting boats, we kind of forgot about, remember when we were putting the mast down in Sebastian? What was that boat that was being towed?
Oh, we did see that. Yeah, when we were in Sebastian, we saw one of the traditional Hawaiian canoes that's going around the world right now. And I did see in the news that one of them was coming from Miami. So I think they were towing it somewhere to do some repairs or whatever, but the mast was down and it was under tow, but going up through the intercoastal.
Yeah, it looked really neat.
So it was pretty cool.
We'll have to pull up that story and see how it's going.
Yep. And then the last story I have is about another one of these historical voyages. This is the Kon-Tiki 2 expedition. And unfortunately, this one a couple weeks ago had to, they had to be rescued off the coast of Chile. 14 crewmen were rescued off the coast of Chile on the Kon-Tiki 2, which had been sailing two balsa rafts from Peru to Eastern Island and back. And they were documenting climate change, marine life, and the impact of pollution. The crew had spent 114 days on the Pacific Ocean, and they reached Easter Island, covering 4,500 nautical miles, before they requested a rescue. And they were about 950 miles from Chile. And they said it was really due to atypical winds, this being a El Nino year. The weather patterns that they encountered were really unusual, and they just realized that they were never going to make it back to South America, and it was just going to take too long, and I think the raft was starting to probably have problems. So this was actually, if anybody saw the Kon-Tiki documentary, if you haven't, it's really interesting how they did the original documentary. Thor Heyerdahl wanted to prove that people from South America could colonize Polynesia, and he actually set off and did this in 1947. Yeah, 1947. And they actually accomplished it. And so now they wanted to show that they could actually sail to from South America to Polynesia and then back. Unfortunately, this time it failed, but they made it there, and they were heading back when it just the winds weren't cooperating. It was a kind of a strange year for the seasons. So that is it for our sailing news this week. We'll be right back with the product of the week. So now we're going to go into our product of the week, and this is something that I've been using for over 5 years. It comes in real handy for all of our saltwater trips. It's a product called Saltaway, and essentially what it is it's a solution and a sprayer that they sell with it that you put on the end of your regular garden hose, and then you use this solution, kind of like a car wash type solution, but it works really well at taking away salt residue on your boat, your trailer, inside your engine. And I've looked at a number of different these products over the years, and Saltaway, time and time again, is the one that everybody says, you know, I tried everything else, didn't work as well, this one worked the best. So I use it every time we come back from salt water. I first use it, hook it up to the outboard engine, you put the solution in, you run it through the engine for 30 seconds, and it completely cleans out all the salt inside the engine. Then you take it off there, and I start at the top of the boat and rinse off the boat with regular water, spray this off, rinse it off, get all the salt water off, all the metal fittings, even takes it off all the crusty off the fiberglass. Anybody that's spent time in salt water, when you're bashing through the water, it just all of that spray just starts caking on salt, kind of like a glazed donut.
And it's absolutely like a glazed donut. You feel like a glazed donut absolutely. After
it. So it gets all of that off of there. But the big thing it's saving us a lot of money on, and we talked about this earlier, is on our boat trailer. I know a lot of people that listen to this may have their boats in the water, or they do a lot of time just in fresh water and they don't have to worry about this. But I know we have a lot of Florida and other coastal listeners. If you have a boat on a trailer, this makes a huge difference in the life of the trailer and also the life of your engine. Just spraying all the metal parts around where the engine gets hooked up, it can really keep the salt off of there. But I spray all the brakes really good, and I just talked at the beginning of the show about the fact that our brakes are lasting longer than our mechanic says they should. All of the metal parts, anything on the trailer, all the lights, everything gets sprayed. The tongue of the trailer, even the back of my truck I go over with, and it's helping keep that from rusting in the salt air. So thought it'd be a good product to outline on here. I'm going to put the link to our Amazon link for it in the show notes. You get the solution, which comes in different size bottles, but the starting one is a 32-ounce container, which should last you, I think it's probably uses about 2 or 3 ounces, so maybe 15 washes. and it comes with the mixer. And you'll look online, look at the reviews, and you're going to see a ton of great reviews. People that said that, you know, they've been using it for 12 years in their boat and trailer in salt water, and everything still looks new. You're also going to see some people that are a little bit negative on the actual device that sprays the liquid, and they say, you know, it strips easy and all these other things. If you're careful putting it on and off, I've been using the exact same one for 6 years. It still looks like new, still works like new. Probably have done over 60, 70 washes with it. So if you're careful with it, no problem. It works great. It is not an inexpensive solution. The 32 ounce combo with the solution and the mixer is $32. I now buy gallon jugs of it, which I bought 1 gallon jug and I've been using it for years. And I think those are $45. But if you go online and look at all the other ones, people will say, don't bother, just get salt away. It works the best. So want to let you guys know that is the product of the week. And you can get that on Amazon in our Amazon program. As we always talk about, you can find it on our website at thesailingroad.com, or specifically in the show notes for that salt away product. You can get the link right there and go in. And anything that you're buying on Amazon really helps out our show. It helps provide us some financial support. And you can find those links in the show notes. Go right from your phone to the show notes and see that. Or at thesailingroad.com/Amazon. And also on our top menu, you'll see links to our store and also the Amazon link. And now we also have a Canadian link, so you can go find that on our website. We've got over 90 products that we tested on the boat in there. We've got products that listeners have recommended. So get out there and look at it, and it does provide us great support for the show. We've actually had a lot more people using it recently, and it makes a big difference in getting support for the show, so we really appreciate that. And then, as we always talk about, the other big thing you can do is spread the word on the podcast, and we've had a jump in new listeners recently, and I think that's because more and more people are telling others about it and hearing a story that they think a friend would like and showing how to access it on their phone. So that really helps us a lot. And if you're enjoying the show, you can also show us your support on Patreon. We have not reached the point yet where we are able to get sponsors to sponsor the show. So your individual support really means a lot to us. And you can find all the details on that on our website at thesailingroad.com. There's a link right in the menu at the top on Patreon, and you can look at that. We've got some new people signing up, so we really appreciate that. And it means so much to us to get that support from you. And we'd love to hear from everybody. So if you have anything you can share with us, tell us about your sailing experiences, any products that you use that you like, just email us. And you can do that at crew@thesailingroad.com. And that is it for this week. Thanks for listening. We appreciate all your support, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
We'll talk to you guys soon.